AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Caring for aging parents or other loved ones while working, raising children, and trying to live your own life? Wondering how to find the time for your personal health and happiness? Well, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Happy, Healthy Caregiver Podcast, the show where real family caregivers share how to be happy and healthy while caring for others. Now, here's your host, family caregiver and certified caregiving consultant, Elizabeth Miller.
Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Happy, Healthy Caregiver Podcast on the Whole Care Network. If this is your first time listening, welcome. This is a podcast produced bi-weekly to help family caregivers integrate self-care and caregiving into their lives. Each episode has an accompanying show notes page, so if you'd like more details about the topics, products, and resources we speak about, you'll find the show notes by going onto the website, happyhealthycaregiver.com, and underneath the podcast menu, click the image for today's show. I am so grateful to you, my listeners. Your ratings and reviews have helped expand the show's reach and impact more caregivers' lives. If you haven't left a rating or review for the podcast yet, please consider doing so by visiting bit.ly/HHC pod review. They can just be a sentence or two, like this 5-star review from Jen P., who says, "This is a go-to podcast for anyone caring for family members in complex times. Sharing our stories and having accessible resources will get us through this growing crisis." Before we get into today's Caregiver Spotlight episode, I want to first shine the light on our episode sponsor, Rare Patient Voice. Do you want to earn cash in exchange for your opinion? Researchers recognize that the true disease experts are those living with the condition and their family caregivers. Rare Patient Voice, or RPV, helps connect researchers with patients and family caregivers for over 700 diseases and conditions. For patients and caregivers, RPV provides the opportunity to voice their opinions to improve medical products and services while earning cash rewards. Rare Patient Voice, helping patients and caregivers share their voices. If you are interested, join the RPV panel at rarepatientvoice.com/happyhealthycaregiver. Today's guest is Susie Singer Carter. Susie cared for her mom, Norma, for 16 years until she passed away last July from Alzheimer's disease. Susie is a multi-award-winning filmmaker, actor, and caregiver advocate. You can see all of these skills intertwined in her 2018 Oscar-qualified short film, My Mom and the Girl, starring Valerie Harper in her final performance. Susie also produces and hosts the Love Conquers All's podcast and is the co-creator of the outrageous horror comedy narrative podcast, I Love Lucifer. She's currently producing a documentary, No Country for Old People, which centers on long-term care neglect and the systemic healthcare crisis responsible for it. In this episode, we dive deep into Susie's current documentary project and the stories surrounding it. Susie also reflects on some of the toughest years of her life and the essential, totally accessible self-care tools which have helped make Susie's 16-year caregiving season sustainable. Enjoy the show. Hi, Susie. Welcome to the Happy Healthy Caregiver Podcast.
Hello, Elizabeth. How are you?
Good. I'm excited about this conversation, the last one I'm going to be having for 2022. Yes, this will be one of the first podcasts in 2023. So I'm excited about that.
Happy New Year.
I know. Happy New Year. We always start episodes with a little inspiration from the Happy Healthy Caregiver Jar. So I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Susie. It says, oh, so many want to be shared today. Let's pick this guy. Okay. It says, sometimes I need to go off on my own. I'm not sad. I'm not angry. I'm just recharging my batteries.
And that's amazing. I love that.
Yeah, I think sometimes we just need our own space. I know, I don't know what you classify yourself as, Susie, but I call myself a outgoing introvert. Like, I love people and I'm a giver of my energy, but then I have to retreat and restock by writing and reading and having some alone time.
I could go along with that. I think that that resonates with me. Yeah, I think that that makes a lot of sense because people that are extroverts, we spend a lot of energy and we don't realize it because we enjoy it, right? And then you're like, why am I so burnt out? Because you can get burnt out because you don't realize how much energy it takes.
Well, to be on, and you're on a lot. You've got the podcast, you have your filmmaking career, your multiple podcasts, I should say, and you're in the spotlight a lot. So it can be draining. Well, I want to, we introduced you in the intro a little bit, but I would love for you to share a little bit about your caregiving story with your mama, Norma.
Oh, okay. Well, isn't it Alzheimer's? Well, Alzheimer's is a long journey sometimes anyway. So how to truncate that?
I mean, how long was your journey with your mama?
16 years.
16 oh my years. Gosh. You're yes. close to the record. I think I've heard 18, I think might be the record of somebody that I was coaching. That's a long time, Susie. Like, how have you made this sustainable?
It was a learning process. It was such a learning process for me. And I made so many mistakes along the way. So many. Because, 16 years ago, I knew this much about Alzheimer's. I really didn't know anything. I mean, I think I met one of my mother's friend's mother who was at Thanksgiving dinner with us, who played piano brilliantly. But every time she saw me, would say, oh, hello, who are you? So I love your hair. And I'd go, oh, hi, Esther, I'm Susie. And I'd reintroduce myself. And I thought, oh my God, my mom has this disease. This is what it is. That's all I knew.
That's all you knew.
That's all I knew. And my mom, like most of us that go through this and you have someone that is one of the loves of your life, it's really difficult. And it's very difficult, I think, watching somebody who is so vibrant like you and, who has is just in life and giving it loud out and loving everything about it, from food to travel to work to our everything. And then to see her get smaller and smaller, but still try to stay who she is. And I think, if I jump to the end, I say, my God, my mom taught me so much with this disease. Like, she taught me more than I could ever learn.
What are some of the things that she's taught you?
To work with the hand you're dealt, because that's all you have. And so you might as well take it for all you can, take all the good out of it, enjoy what you can, live whatever you have, wherever you're at, live it. My mother, if you went to meet my mom, even in the last couple of years, you'd say, Norma, how are you? Or mommy, how are you doing? She'd go, I'm great. I'm alive. Life is good. The alternative sucks.
Yeah.
And so, and she's always been that way. She was always like, have just a delicious appetite for everything. And so it made me realize that even someone who loved life so much could make her world smaller and still love it. Mm. And that's beautiful, because for the grace of God, go any of us.
That's so true. Do you classify yourself, Susie, as like a sandwich generation caregiver?
I do. I'm probably the beginning. I'm probably the earlier ones, because, you know, I had my daughters were 9 years apart. So my second daughter really, like, she really felt, if you saw my film, she's portrayed in it, and she's 15 in it. Mm-hmm. When my mom came to move in with us right out of, on the tails of my divorce. And so, you know, it couldn't have been more stressful. But, you know, I was raising a teenager smack dab in the middle of hormone hell. And then my mother going through, you know, basically the same kind of sort of independent resistance. And, you know, like both of them were pushing me away like this, right? Because my mom was like, I don't have Alzheimer's. I'm not sick. I'm fine. You know, it's you. And so I really, it was the very tough year of Alzheimer's. But by the end of it, you know, both my daughter and I learned so much. And my daughter, when my mom had to move into assisted living, she was like I say in the film, she said, I'm not ready for nanny to go. And it was a hard year.
I have no doubt. It's, you know, the caregiving season, and yours was particularly long. It's like, are there parts of it that were more difficult than other parts?
I think so. I think the year that I'm describing may have been the hardest, because, and which is why I wanted her to live with me during that year, because my mom, I say that I was crossing her over the bridge to acceptance. And so I feel.
Were you already there? Were you already across the bridge? Yeah. You
no,
both were crossing.
Not at all.
It. Yeah.
Both were. It was, you know, what is that? What's that saying? Like, it was trial by error constantly, yeah. You know, because I mean, I look back at videos where I literally cringe where I see myself going, Mom, what day is it? Mom, where do you live? Mom,
you didn't know.
I didn't know. And, you know, and my mom was so adorable. Like, she'd go, I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Their brain is broken. And if someone's listening to that, like, what's wrong with those questions? It's like, you got to kind of meet them where they are in their reality.
You have to.
Yeah.
And it's
Tipa
so
Snow
beautiful.
Is a great person. Like, we didn't know about Tipa Snow when we were starting all of this out, but, you know, now she's a great resource. What are some of the other resources that have helped you over the years? Like, you know, when you know better, you do better. Where mm-hmm. did you find support?
I have to tell you, like, in the beginning of my journey, I didn't know, there wasn't that much support, and there wasn't that much resource online. Even like, I remember going online and going, I mean, of course there was the Alzheimer's Association, and then there was, you know, there was some local senior, you know, living kind of community places you could take. I remember taking my mom to this, cause my mom was a singer, and I thought, oh, this will be great. So I took her to this, like, core, I was a choir that was all, you know, people with dementia. And my mom, who is such a snob about her voice, that's the one thing she was a snob about, because she was so good. And my mom, like, she just took over the room and then looked at me and went, who are these people? Like,
she owned it, and then was like,
she owned
yeah.
it, but then she was like, I don't belong here. Like, what is this? You know, so, You know, it's like, it's like being a mom again, in a way, because you have to let the person that you're caring for guide you, because you can't be a stage mom, and you can't be a stage daughter. You have to let them, you know, if you are you love soccer your whole life and your daughter hates it, you can't force them to do that.
No.
And so you need to meet them where they're at, whether they have dementia or whether they're going through puberty or whether they're 2 years old or 3 years old, that, you know, people have their own path, their own lane that they're going to choose, and what makes them feel comfortable and safe and fulfilled.
Where were some of the places that you and your mom intersected as far as, like, some of your happy memories? Because I know, you know, so much of what we talk about in Alzheimer's can be negative, and there is joy in this process too. So where do you find, like, where have you found the most joy with your mama?
Well, my mom, I mean, first of all, humor, music, humor and music. I mean,
those are great.
And eating and, you know, it's a lot of love and a lot of love. And, you know, we're very demonstrative Jewish family. And we are like, you know, we love to love and, you know, and love is, it's nonverbal. You know, you don't have to have words for it. It's felt. Babies feel it. People with dementia feel it. When at the very end, you can get big smiles. My mom, I can make my mom laugh up to the day she died.
Yes.
I can make her laugh.
I've seen that.
My joy. That was my joy. It's like, if I can get her to laugh, I'm golden.
You're winning. Uh-huh. And if people, you mentioned your difficult year, and if people want to kind of get a glimpse of what your life was like, I have watched your short film. I loved it. Thank you. Mom and the girl. And I was looking to see where people could watch it. I know it's available on Google Play. Is there anywhere else that people, or is that the best place to go?
No, it's on you. It's on iTunes and Amazon. And if they want, I can give them a link, because it's not a money-making project for me. It's like, you know, I want everyone to see it, because I feel like if you've been in this world, and even if you're not familiar with dementia, it doesn't touch your world, it's still a story about leaning into people and looking at for the gifts that you get. When one skill or, you know, ability decreases, others get larger, you know? And so, and always, even just regular old aging, I mean, people lose their filters, and losing filters is not a bad thing. You know, it really can be, it's really kind of beautiful. That's why I love children and older people. Cause
yeah,
you get what you see. Like,
yeah.
You're fat. Yes, I am.
Well, and my brother's neurodivergent, so I would add him to the mix too. Like, he will tell me my hair, whatever. Yes. Uh-huh.
Like, and if you say, does this look good? They'll go, no.
No. Yeah. Even unsolicited, it is what it is. So it's an acquired taste, but I find humor in it.
I think it's refreshing. Sure.
It's refreshing.
Because when you get a compliment, it's real.
It is real. I know. He does tell me all the time, I was a beautiful baby. I love that. Yeah. So you're my mom and the girl. I'm going to link to it in the show notes. I feel like you have had a lot of amazing wins in your career as a filmmaker, a writer, producer, director, and you've done a lot of different things. Not all of it has been caregiving and Alzheimer's focused. But I find that when I follow you on social and I kind of see, I feel like my mom and the girl is my interpretation is that it's one of your proud moments. Like, it is one of the things that you.
It was inspired and it's inspiring. And that's, and I think that, you know, we can only ask, I mean, those really are, that is your best joy, is to inspire and to, I mean, joy comes from helping other people. At the end of the day, you can make as much money. I mean, look, I've done projects I'm super proud of, and I'm a 13-year-old girl at all. I will be 13 when I die. That's just the way it is. I mean, I wrote and associate produced the Bratz movie for Lionsgate. I love that movie. I'm still proud of it because, you know, it, I mean, little girls now watch it and go, oh my God. Like, I have fans on Instagram from little girls that love Bratz, and they are like, you know, they love me because they know I wrote it. And so, and that's a lovely thing for me. And then I did Soul Surfer, which was about Bethany Hamilton, and I'm super proud of that. But I think, you know, this, Soul Surfer is inspiring. You can't say it isn't. But it's not my story.
Yes.
So it was Bethany Hamilton, and Bethany Hamilton is fierce, and she was incredible, and she still is fierce and incredible. But this is my mom. This is so personal, and I know that we're in a crisis, and so I feel like that's my best voice that I want to amplify. I can amplify my other stuff. I'm doing I'm going to be directing a movie from a book that I adapted, that I was hired to adapt, called Run, based on a book called Plain Jane. And it's, and it's lovely. It's all, and she's running a marathon the entire time. It's a dark comedy, but it's, you know, and I'll talk about that when it's out. I for sure will.
Yes.
I'm proud of that. But right now I think platforms should be used to, for there's, I don't know.
It inspires, I feel like your first, your Alzheimer's million, my mom and the girl, it inspires a different look at a relationship with Alzheimer's. Like, again, mm-hmm. seeing the joy, seeing the positive, seeing the, how it has shaped, you know, both you and your mom. And what an experience for you to do that with Valerie Harper. That was her last production that she had done.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And, you know, now things are kind of turning into a different crisis for you. Sadly, this is part of your story, too, is that, you know, in your mom, Norma's end of life, she spent the last 5 years in a long-term care community mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, and it had 5-star reviews. And tell us a little bit more. I know you shared that, you know, obviously you're working on a documentary that's yes. going to educate people about this crisis around yes. long-term care. But what is your piece of the story that you can share with, that you're comfortable sharing with us?
I'm comfortable in sharing. I mean, we're going through there's a systemic healthcare crisis in long-term care. It's been going on this is not new. It's been for several decades. I mean, there hasn't been any real federal regulation since 1987. So mm-hmm. it's been a while. And it's just, and it hasn't gotten better. It's only gotten worse. And we only saw that. And I only saw that during COVID. COVID was, you know, there was a silver lining to COVID for our community, because it really pulled the curtain back on a lot of shenanigans that were going on.
Yeah. And helping us see the caregiver and how vital we are in this process.
Right.
It's certainly a silver lining for sure.
Definitely. You know, I mean, we were kept from our loved ones for a long time. I didn't see my mom for 13 months.
Whoa.
Person. Yeah. And, you know, and then, yeah. And the understaffing that was going on, unbeknownst to most of us, was so apparent once, you know, they started, when people were having to quarantine and staff members were having to quarantine, and they were understaffed, you know, it's just so.
They already have a hard time keeping people. Like I know my mom wasn't in a skilled nursing, but she was in a assisted living community. Right. And I have my own stories about that. We've tried 2 different ones and it just wasn't a fit for us. I don't know who it's a fit for, but it wasn't a fit for us. But same kind of thing, the turnover, the craziness, and, you know, being an advocate.
It's a business, and businesses are set up to make money. They're not, you know, these, even if they're nonprofit, they're still profit. You can't run a nonprofit without paying people. So, you know, and there's a lot of nonprofits that are, you know, doing wonderful things. And then there's quite a lot.
Yeah.
Bigger percentage that aren't doing such wonderful things. And the problem is that we have a health, we have the workers that are stuck in this system that is set up to fail for them, for doctors and nurses and people with good intentions, CNAs and everybody that works within that system in that framework. And they can't work within it. It's an exercise in futility, because if you have any empathy and ethics, you can't last. Right. It's too hard, and they're underpaid and overworked. Yeah. So it's a bit of a lose-lose.
What was your experience, Susie? Like, when you, after you were able to see your mama, Norma, like, what, what was evident, like what was apparent to you?
Right. Well, so we were only allowed to Zoom, like I said, the first 13 months, and Zoom once a week. And, you know, that Zoom became our lifeline. Mm. Well, it, you know, as you can imagine, it's difficult to Zoom with someone who's in later stages of dementia because, you know, it's just difficult. And my daughter had just had a baby. And so the two of them trying to get them to connect over Zoom was just, you know, that was a comedy. I mean, my mom's over here. She doesn't know. I mean, and the baby. And then eventually they ended up figuring out how to connect, and we all figured out how to connect because we did it enough to figure it out. But what I kept noticing was that my mom was really quickly becoming less and less functioning the way that she was before. She also didn't look right. And then I started seeing her in bed at 3 in the afternoon. And I kept saying, I would ask the CNA, do you know why is my mom ill? Like it's 3 in the afternoon. Why isn't she dressed in, you know, at least in her chair? And I don't know, Susie, I don't know, but it's crazy over here. It's crazy right now. We're just, it's awful. And I would just go, well, can you find out from the nurse, like if there's anything wrong? I mean, she shouldn't be in bed all the time. And, you know, that's when I started to notice that she was not getting the help that the she activity. Needed.
Do you think they were over-medicating them to kind of keep them?
I know my mom before that, before this ever happened, my mom was on a drug called Depakote. This was 8 years ago. That's what put her in a wheelchair. Mm. So, you know, and that was at an assisted living, another 5-star place. So, you know, that's a whole nother subject. Which
yeah.
Is, you know,
no, I get it. I get it. Like, I mean, I know my mom, you know, in our experience in assisted living, like they had the same, one of the things that was frustrate me is that the nurses or the people who were doing the medicine, my mom was diabetic, and the people who were doing the meals and getting people to the dining room and the assisted living were all the same people. And so because they wouldn't give my mom, they only did the insulin in a private room, they would take care of everything else, you know, the food, getting the people down there. And then they would come and get her and do the insulin. And by the time, you know, she needed help with the wheelchair at some point getting down, it was like people were already leaving. She'd get stuck with, you know, somebody that was, you know, she didn't have anything in common with. And then finally she just stopped going down to the room. And then they started bringing food to her that was cold and not the same. And it just was like a spiral. And I was like, why do you have the same people doing all this stuff? So the next time we went to a different assisted living, that right. was a question I learned. Like, we're learning, right? Like, do you have the same people doing this and this? They're like, no, we have separate med techs. We bring it by in a cart. And so the first place I picked for the amenities, for sure. And then the second place for sure for the care. And now like I have a whole list of questions and things for people to observe. What is some of your advice, like after you have gone through this, like what would you, for a caregiver who's looking at long-term care community?
Here's the thing, and that nobody knows your person that you love more than you. Nobody, not a doctor, and there's every disease has its own set of particular, you know, circumstance. Like your mom was diabetic, and that brings a whole other, you know, list of things that you need to pay attention to as, mm-hmm. as the caregiver. For someone with dementia, you know, not everybody most people don't understand dementia. So they misinterpret, they do. And they, you know, I mean, when my mom was in the hospital earlier this year, I remember calling because I couldn't visit her. I said, can I please FaceTime with her? And the charge nurse, the head nurse, said, honey, she doesn't talk. Well, honey, she's intubated, and honey, she has Alzheimer's. She needs to see her daughter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't, it should just be enough. Like you said, you're the expert and your mom, and you're the expert in care, and you're the client. And
yes. So that's my advice is that whatever you have to do with your loved one, if you have to put them in long-term care, there's no shame in that because sometimes, you know, we, Well, I'm not equipped to do all the things. I wasn't trained in that. I am a very good CNA though now.
Well, you've gotten your master's in caregiving.
I've got my master's in it. But I mean, you know, there's skills that we don't have. There's equipment that we don't have. And, you know, sometimes you just can't do it in your own home. I wish I could have done that. Sometimes I just wish I could just go to my mom and just go, you know, jump into her bed with her and, you know, snuggle. But it wasn't realistic, but you have to stay in touch. You have to be active. You have to be a part of that care team. If you're not, you don't know what's going on, and you are the one. And if you're not involved, believe me, they know it.
Mm-hmm. Because they'll take advantage of it.
They will take advantage of it. And that's just a fact. That's just down to, you know, economics.
That's in a hospital situation too, for sure. It's like, I used to always wonder, like, you'd see these people in a bed by themselves and you go and visit your loved one over and over again. And it's like, nobody's ever visiting these people. Nobody's ever.
No, there's a term. Someone just told me a term. It's called throwaways. I was just interviewing somebody yesterday who is a nurse. And one of the things they call, you know, it's like this little thing that they call, you know, in their industry, the nurses and CNAs are called, they call them throwaways because they don't have to deal with these people that don't have advocates.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. That's heartbreaking. And it's, you know, it is hard to, I think to your point about the judgment and everybody's situation is different. Like I know for my mom, I was not equipped to be able to take care of her full time in my home. Mm-hmm. You know, kids working, and she needed a high level of care. She was morbidly obese and lots of different things. So I do hope that the judgment of caregivers, like, I don't want this to be like a working mom, non-working mom situation.
No, no.
Like all caregivers are caregivers. And I think that's a misnomer that because your loved one might be in a community does not mean that you still don't have a caregiving role. You still have a caregiving role.
You have a massive caregiving role, you know, and I tell people all the time, like when my mom got into this facility, this was 5 years ago, this is when she ran out of money because, like I said, Alzheimer's can be a long disease and care is expensive. So
Yes. You
will run out of money unless you're a billionaire, unless you're Elon Musk, you're going to run out of money at some point and you're going to be on Medicare and Medi-Cal or CADE, whatever it is in your state. But, you know, I got my mom into this wonderful place. It's beloved here in Los Angeles. And I literally was like, I can sleep at night. I don't have to be a helicopter daughter. I can do my life and I can visit my mom and, you know, I can take part in the caregiving, you know, the monthly meetings that they have, you know, for their caregiving plan and, you know, all that stuff. And I really believed that it was all happening. I really believed it, but unbeknownst to me, my mom was walking around with a stage three, you know, pressure wound for a year before she went into the hospital in January when it was stage four. And even when I visited her, God bless her, she didn't give me signs of that. I knew something was off, but yeah.
How many stages of bed wounds are there?
There's four stages.
Yeah.
And, you know, let me be very clear. Let me clarify that if it gets past stage two, it's neglect. Mm. People get bed sores because if they're sitting too much you and I would.
My mom got them and my sister was a, you know, helicopter, lived with my mom caregiver. I mean, it can happen, but she was on it. You know what I mean?
Right.
They were treating it and moving her and she had a special bed. And
right.
So it can happen. For sure.
It can and will happen.
Yes.
It can and will happen. And those, I mean, that's the number one thing that you should be looking for. You know, if you're in the healthcare, nursing home, long-term care community as a worker, that's what you're trained for. I mean, that's number one, no falling, no bed sores, you know, and that's number one and two on the
yes.
list. So if it gets past the stage two, that means they're just not taking care of it. It should never get past stage two, ever, ever.
Yeah.
And I, you know, one of the things that I hope my documentary, which by the way is called No Country for Old People, because there is no country for old people right now. We're not the only country that's failing. But, you know, so this is like a global issue. But I think, you know, we don't know, like, I didn't know what a bed sore really was. Did you?
Not until my sister, you know, would send me a picture, you know, that even now sometimes come up when I'm looking things and I'll see like, scary, oh gosh, right? Yeah, they're scary. Yeah.
That's scary.
And my mom was bedridden. Like she was bedridden for 2 years. So the chances of her getting a bed sore were great. High. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, they need to be moving them and having wedges and the special things underneath. And so there are a lot of questions and things that we can look for. I mean, sadly, Susie, you are the best, quote unquote, best person that this trauma could happen to, because you're a filmmaker, you're a storyteller, you're not afraid to like dive in and dig and get to the hard truths of things, and you're a respected caregiver advocate. So like, who better to make serious waves in this crisis than you?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, it's funny when I grew up in this industry, like, you know, people would always say, oh, you're such a surprise. Like people underestimate a lot of women, right? It just happens that way. And I felt the same way in the caregiving community when I would go into the long term, you know, the facilities, and they would just, you know, patronize me. Oh, your mom's fine. I mean, she could be bleeding out of her ear, and they'd go, oh, that's okay, 'cause it's not infected, you know, because they just thought they could just talk circles around me, but they didn't know who they were messing with.
Yeah. where is the documentary in the process? Like, where is it? And now the No Country
I'm in the middle of writing this script, which when I say script, because it's all real, I'm writing the story of that happened from January 17th to July 6th, 17th. So it's such a perfect hero's journey, my mother's last 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I'm using that as the spine of this documentary that will include other stories that will, you know, corroborate what happened to my mom. And then I have so many experts that have jumped on in our industry that, you know, that are incredible people from, you know, the National Consumer Voice, who mm-hmm. are my fiscal sponsors, and Canner here in California, who are amazing advocates, and the Gray Panthers in New York, who are, you know, United Nations. I mean, they are globally supportive, like fierce people that are way smarter than me, that will bring the hows and the whys and the calls to action that we need to take. So I'm hoping to bring the heart and the story that will get the attention of the public that is so, so desperately needed. Because listen, this is my mom's story, but it is not just hers. It's all of ours.
It's a lot of people's story. And we'll link also where how people can contribute to the documentary project. You. You'll see that in the show notes page. What are you hoping the change that this inspires? Like, what would you love to see happen?
I hope to punch everybody in the gut and wake everybody up to know that this is what long-term care health looks like, because it's not just older people. It's anybody. It's, you know, people that are, like there was a guy in the forum last night that I was on with the Gray Panthers, who was 32 years old and was in a car accident at 17 and lost two legs, and he is bedridden.
Yeah.
Right now. And so, you know, and he has stories to tell. So it's not just older people that are affected, but what the change that I want to see is like that everybody knows what's going on, so that there's power and knowledge, and that we know, because listen, it's not like all of these amazing advocacy coalitions haven't been to the Congress and almost passed bills that needed to be passed. It's going to take a monumental movement like the Me Too movement. Mm. So that where we shame the upper tier into having to do what needs to be done.
Is it more pay for the people who work there? Is it more?
It's appropriate pay. Yeah.
Appropriate pay.
It's incentivizing people to come back to this workforce, because nurses, amazing nurses and CNAs and people that are skilled have left in droves because they're not compensated. The job is hard, and
the ratio is way off.
They're handcuffed to the mm-hmm. system. So that's what I hope that we can fix, you know, tear down this broken system and rebuild it so that it's people over profit and not profit over people.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Is there anybody doing it well?
There's a couple countries that are doing it, you know, and there was a caregiver that I am in love with, Patrick Berglund from Switzerland, who I met through my film. I've never met him in person, and he's a vocational caregiver, you know, working within their system. And I mean, he's celebrated. He's on the cup. I mean, they call him the singing caregiver because he uses music. He's this handsome young guy who, with his two grown daughters, and he absolutely loves working in that community. And I'm going to have him in the documentary because I want people to hear how it can work and how it's a beautiful experience.
Yeah, show them what good looks like. And yeah, I think there's been a lot of great ideas that I've, you know, kind of heard about, like, you know, blending multiple generations, like college kids with older adults, and sure. You know, yeah, like there's got to be a better way for sure.
There's much better ways. It's just, but it's like anything. Follow the money. Follow the money, and you'll find out where the problem is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We would be remiss, Susie, if we didn't also mention that you have your own podcast.
I do.
Yeah, with Dawn Preece, Love Conquers Alls. And then also your super fun podcast, I Love Lucifer.
Yes.
Talk about what makes these podcasts unique in their own way.
Okay, well, Love Conquers Alls is really just, it's an extension of my mom and the girl, because I wanted to change the conversation, which I think I've helped to do. And the movie continues to do that, which is to, like you already mentioned it, you know, looking at this disease and not with love and with acceptance and taking away the stigma. And I wanted to keep the conversation going. Mm-hmm. After that. So I did. I started that Love Conquers Alls, and I wanted to keep it upbeat and real. Not, I don't want to sugarcoat it, but I just want to say, okay, so here's the bad parts, but here's how we can deal with it. Here's how we navigate it. Here's how we can make the best of it, because it can be a lung disease. And why should we get robbed of everything? Mm-hmm. Right. So we talk about that. That's it. And Dawn and I are crazy and have fun, and we hope that you get a laugh out of it too. And we received best podcast 2020, the year that I launched, which was amazing for me.
Yes.
And that was with the New Media Film Festival. So we were very proud of that. And and the second one we started during COVID, which was I Love Lucifer, which is based on a series that we were developing for Fox. And then, you know, COVID came and we thought, we're so bored. Why don't we just do a narrative podcast? That'll be easy. We basically, it's the hardest thing we've ever done, because it was just the two of us. And but we ended up with 10 episodes for our first season, which is done, which is, you know, on the Realm Network, which you can find on everywhere, you know, on every platform. We were nominated for 7 Audioverse Awards, and we were finals for those. And we have, it's a comedy horror, two B movie stars who fight movie monsters by day and real monsters by night. And that is the concept.
It's super fun.
It's super funny and scary. And, but fun. And it's a girl duo. It's female driven. And if you like Adam Levy from The Witcher, he's our lead. He plays the father, and he also plays our narrator. And he's just an amazing, just beautiful actor. He's also on Industry. He's a regular on Industry.
I love it. It's very unique. It's a very unique podcast for sure. I get a lot of joy too, Susie, when I see, we'll put links to all that in the show notes. But when we talk about self-care on the show, and I love watching your hip hop dances. Yeah. Is that one of your main go-tos to kind of just relieve?
Totally. Pressure? Totally. When going back to my divorce, like 10 years ago, and when my mom moved in with me there, I discovered this hip hop class at the gym that was like walking distance for me. And I was like, I'm doing this. And it became my meditation, really, because when you're dancing, you can't think of anything else but where's your body going and the music. That's all.
So true. You're present for sure.
You have to be present. You can't think of anything for a whole hour. And it's first of all, your endorphins get going. It's so healthy. You're going to lose weight. You're going to feel good. You're going to feel, and it's like dancing. I can't recommend it enough, because it's like, it's a community thing too. So when you dance with other people and you're synchronized, oh my God, it feels like the best sex ever.
Oh, wow. Well, you sold it to me. I'm like, I'm going to put that on my 20 for 2023 list of,
like, girl, do it.
Like, I don't know if I have the moves, but it sounds like a lot of fun. I need to give it a try.
Oh, there's a bunch of different classes. It doesn't have to be hip hop. I mean, you can,
I used to be jazzercise. I was a jazzercise.
Whatever. Even if it's Zumba, if I can't find another, I'll do anything. If it's moving to music, I'm there.
Yeah.
Do it. Perfect. Just move. It's so much fun. It keeps you young and healthy. And like we competed, a little crew of ours from this class, and we won. And I was like, it's better than winning an Emmy. I'm telling you, I was like, oh my God, I brought it. And I felt so good. And I was probably twice as old as everybody there. So,
which makes it even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Well, I want to dig into a little more of your self-care. I'm going to ask you some questions for the lightning round from my book, the Just For You Daily Self-Care Journal. So whatever comes to mind, there's no wrong answers here. This is a good one though. It says, when you are older and need care, what do you hope someone does for you?
Puts lip liner on my lips. Everyone.
Pluck the hairs. Yeah. From my chin. Shave my mustache.
Pluck my hairs. Pluck my hairs and make sure.
That's true though. Yes. Yes.
And keep, make sure music's around and yummy food.
I love it. That's doable. Okay, we've kind of talked about this. Okay, if you were to lose all your possessions, what item would you miss the most?
All of them, like anything?
Yeah.
My computer.
Why is that?
Because it's my lifeline to the world.
Yeah.
And to my creativity. So if I have a laptop or a phone, whatever, I can be creative.
Yeah, that's
creativity
good.
Is for me, that's also very nourishing.
I love it. How would you spend a day if you had it all to yourself?
That's a big question. I have a lot of days to myself. That's why I'm wondering. I'm thinking, now I do. Are you thinking, like, if I was caregiving?
No, I mean, if it brings you joy, like, what's something you would do? Because sometimes people struggle. Like, what brings them joy? What brings you joy? Like, what would you
want to
do?
A lot of things bring me joy. I mean, I love being with my family and my girls and now I have two little baby granddaughters. I can't believe I'm a grandma. I guess I love being with my family. I love playing. I love being creative. Even if it's with a 3-year-old and we're drawing on the floor, that's good for me. Putting on the music and dancing, you know, just putting on Frozen or, you know, the Little Mermaid, and I'll sing every song. Singing at the piano. I play piano. My whole family is musical. I grew up in the music industry. So I can't have a bad day if we're singing.
I love that. Little Mermaid is a classic for sure.
The best.
Yeah. Yes. I love
the best.
Is there anything else, Susie, that you know, we're like, we can't put a bow on this episode until we, something else that you just want to put out there? Or have we pretty much covered?
Oh my gosh. I think we covered everything really quick, right? Didn't have it.
How do people get in touch with you? Like, how do they stay? Where's the best way for people to kind of make sure that they're plugged in and they know when your projects are coming out and what's happening?
Yeah. I listen, social media, that's the biggest problem, is there's so much of it. There's too many and I can't keep up. You can't work and be creative and then try to do all that. So, but I am on everywhere. I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn and Twitter still. And I'm trying to do TikTok, not as much as you. You have a very good presence on TikTok. It's hard.
It's hard.
There's too much to do. And then And where else am I? Facebook, of course, you know, and it's all Suzy Singer Carter. There's, and I also, my company's Go Girl Media. That's another problem. Then you have projects. Then you have separate IDs for your projects. So, oh gosh.
We'll never be bored. That's what I say.
No, no. So yeah, you can find me anywhere. And if you want to email me, I don't care. SuzySingerCarter@gmail.com. I'm wide open. Just don't.
I love that. Let's leave them with that. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm a fan of everything that you're doing. And I just love that caregiving brought us together. Thanks for joining us today on the Happy Healthy Caregiver podcast on the Whole Care Network. As always, show notes that accompany today's episode can be found on my website, happyhealthycaregiver.com. Just look under the podcast menu for today's episode image, and that will take you to the page with the links and information we spoke about today. You'll also find other resources on the website, along with links to purchase the Just For You Daily Self-Care Journal. When you purchase from my website, you'll get a signed copy and, for a limited time, free shipping. If you've enjoyed what you heard today, consider subscribing to the show on your podcast platform. It really helps other family caregivers find the podcast, and you'll automatically receive our bi-weekly shows in your podcast listening queue. Maybe while you're subscribing, consider leaving a 5-star rating and review, or just simply talk it up on your social channels. Let's stay connected. I'm on Instagram and Facebook as Happy Healthy Caregiver. And until we meet again, please take care of you.